entangling grows elicits sadness. Okay? So now we're way beyond the first two cantos here, so don't blame us if you find something shocking. It's the fourth canto. It's very advanced literature. Now it's a story between Lord Shiva and Sati. And the genealogy, let's see, where are we now? This is fourth canto. This is DDPT, Dhruva, Daksha Dhruva Kritu Pacheta. And this is coming about because we're talking about the children of Swayambhu Manu. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. Or if you want an acronym, DAP UP. DAP UP. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. But first is these are all the children of Manu, Swayambhu Manu. And it's important because after the third canto, this is how the Bhagavad Gita is organized. Third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, sixth canto, seventh canto. This is Maharaj Parikshit says, tell me about Swayambhu Manu's children and all the incarnations that occurred. So first he describes Devahuti, who married, had a son once.
Kapila.
Okay. And Akuti, who married.
Aruchi,
Aruchi, who had a son once.
Yagya.
Yagna, okay, who was God. Okay, yeah. And then Prasuti, who married?
Daksha.
Daksha. Yeah. whose daughter was?
Sati.
Who committed suicide before she was old enough to have children. That's a pretty shocking thing. And then Uttanapada, who's the father of?
Dhruva.
Yeah. And then Priyavrata, who's just a great guy. And so it goes like that, one after another. And then after it covers the children of Swayambhu Manu, then in the eighth canto, it covers the other Manus and all their descendants. Ninth canto is our Manu, and then tenth canto is the incarnation of Krishna within our Manu. 11th canto goes back to the descendants of our Manu after Krishna. And 12th canto is a summary of Bhagavatam, glory of Bhagavatam. So very well organized, very systematic. So now we're talking about this whole story and why Sati committed suicide and everything else. We did it yesterday. And she married Lord Shiva. And Brahma told Daksha, right, that he should give her to Shiva. He wasn't in favor of that. Was Daksha a sinful person? Was Ajamil a sinful person? Yeah, okay. Was Daksha an offensive person? Was Ajamil an offensive person?
No.
Very clever. The different things. You can be sinful but not be offensive, and offensive but not be sinful. You know, it's different situations like that. Yeah. Daksha was very, very expert in doing Vishnu Yagna. Kind of like Sankirtan devotee, right? To be like that. Yeah, become very, very good at worshipping Krishna, but very, very insulting and negligent, arrogant towards devotees. So anyway, they're married, they go off to their house, and she gets a lot of dowry from her father, nice ornaments and things like that. And then after some time, she doesn't visit her house because there's this tension between, tension caused by Daksha. Daksha's caused this animosity towards Shiva, so Shiva doesn't go there. But now there's a big sacrifice being performed, a Janmashtami or something. And so she wants to go and see all the flags flapping and see her aunts and her mother and all these things like that. So she's approaching Lord Shiva and saying, if you want to go, we can go. It's full of subtleties and these kind of things like that. If you become purified, you can realize the Bhagavatam is full of these very rich stories. Every single psychological circumstance we can encounter is in the Bhagavatam. So if you take these to heart and become purified, you'll be able to help everybody you meet like that. Yeah. And also, avoid these problems. Okay, so maybe by God's arrangement, we didn't read too much about number 11 yesterday. Maybe we'll go back to it, text number 11. So anyway, she calls him O Never Born, which has significance. And O Blue-Throated One, which has significance. So what is the purport? Parampara. Here, Lord Shiva is addressed as Abhava, which means one who is never born. Although generally he is known as Bhava, one who is born. Rudra, Lord Shiva is actually born from between the eyes of Brahma. who is called Swayambhu, because he is not born of any human being or material creature, but is born directly from the lotus flower, which grows from
the abdomen.
The abdomen of Vishnu. Okay. When Lord Shiva is addressed as Abhava, this may be taken to mean one who has never felt material miseries. Sati wanted to impress upon her husband that even those who were not related to her father were also going, to say nothing of herself, who was intimately related with him. Actually, she was the pet daughter. She was the youngest and everything else. Lord Shiva is addressed here as blue-throated. Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison and kept it in his throat, not swallowing it or allowing it to go down to his stomach. Thus, his throat became blue. Since then, he has been known as Nilakanta, or blue-throated. The reason that Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison was for others' benefit. When the ocean was churned by the demigods and the demons, the churning at first produced poison. So because the poisoned ocean might have affected others who were not so advanced, Lord Shiva drank all the ocean water. In other words, he could drink such a great amount of poison for others' benefit. And now, since his wife was personally requesting him to go to her father's house and drink poison, even if he did not wish to give that permission, he should do so out of his great kindness. Okay. So she's using all kinds of tricks here. So yesterday's verse, which we started reading, we didn't read much of it, translation, she says, Sati says, this manifested cosmos is a wonderful creation of the interaction of the three material modes, okay, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. This truth is fully known to you, yet I am but a poor woman. And as you know, I am not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I wish to see my birthplace once more. So many things to be understood here. We've already had a lot of discussion of Sankhya. A little bit in the first canto. In the second canto, there's a great detail at the end of the second canto. Lord Brahma is describing how the universe is created, all these kind of things. He's the engineer, so he describes all this stuff. Then again, in the third canto, of course, about Kapila. That's the principal explanation of the Bhagavatam of Sankhya. What is this world? What is the cosmos? It's a very mechanical description. Then, when Maitreya meets, that's for a moment, yeah, the canto. Then when Vidura and Maitreya meet, he asks him about, what is it? About the structure of the universe, the Sarga and Visarga. So Brahma goes to many descriptions again about Sankhya. When Kapila is explaining it to his mother, she says the same thing. I'm a less intelligent woman, but I'm attached to all these things. You know, I married Kardama, I had all this opportunity to become detached and renounced. But what I did was I enjoyed dressing up for Janmashtami festivals. I enjoyed cooking nice things for the deities and eating nice things. And I had a really good time in ISKCON. Okay? And it was nice, but I really didn't catch the real essence of it, which is to get liberation. And now my husband's gone, you know, and he said, you take care of me. That's what I need now. I need a good, you know, science class. So Kapila explains Sankhya to her. It's a very sophisticated topic, very natural. It's basically, what is this material world from a spiritual perspective? You know? One of the most basic, simple explanations we can give is that these bodies are actually cell phones, smartphones, right? This yesterday. Right? You have a smartphone right there. You hold up, everybody see it. Okay, okay. There he goes. Okay, so his mother can call him and say, hello, Dhruva, how are you? I'm fine, man. Here's the new kitty. Meow. So is that your mother talking to you? Yeah. Indirectly, it's a manifestation. It's a puppet. So if you actually take the cell phone and take off the image, how thick is the image? very thin, maybe a millimeter like that. And behind it there are little cans and little cylinders and things like that, which don't look at all like the kitty cat or like your mother, you know. So same way, anybody's a doctor here, you take a scalpel, just take a firm press, because you've got to go through everything, okay. A couple horizontal cuts. What do you got? Long intestines, it's about 20 feet, you know. What's it called? This ascending, transverse, and descending colon. Okay. Billy Verdon, Billy Rubin, all the battle dance. Okay. The lungs, okay. Yeah, okay. That's what you're looking at. But I'm looking at you. Right? What an illusion. Yeah, yeah. And you get the vagus. Yeah. All the muscles behind you make all this thing. My God, it's so simple to realize this is a complete illusion. Right? Yeah. Well, does this mean there is no Gora? No. There's somebody someplace else projecting the image. Right? Okay? Nobody's nodding yet. I'm attached. Yeah. It's that simple. You take a bone saw, take the top off, you bring it out. This is like a smartphone, like a cell phone. We all understand smartphones, cell phones pretty much. It's the same thing. It's that simple. You're pretty weird. Well, so is Socrates, so is Solomon, so is Confucius, so is Jesus Christ, so is Krishna. Yeah, so on. So this world is a reflection of Vaikuntha. It's a puppet show. You know, we're here in the puppet show. Hello, how are you? I'm fine, how are you? And we're all trying to like play mommy and daddy and dress up and imitate Krishna and everything else. You know? From Krishna's point of view, it's kind of funny. Like when the kids dress up and have a tea party, like Uncle so-and-so, Aunt so-and-so, they start talking about these things. And many times, for example, you realize kids know a lot more about what's going on in the family than you thought they do. That stuff is kind of embarrassing. Yeah. Yeah. So from Krishna's point of view, it's actually this us trying to imitate him and everything else. And Radha is, you know, has this humorous aspect and has this fun, funny aspect. It has its fun. Krishna cannot, you know, throw intestines all over Vaikuntha. Like you can't do that. You can't toss intestines all over Vaikuntha. So there's no killing of Hiranyakasipu in Vaikuntha. This Bomalila in Vaikuntha appears in a passive form, like a picture or something. You know, Krishna when Shingadev shows all the Lakshmis, you know, how he killed Hiranyakasipu, and you know, like, oh, you're so brave, he's so big. Yes, I am. So, when he kills all these people with his club, he doesn't wash the blood off, and he lets it dry on there, and sometimes when he's in Vaikuntha, he kind of looks at it and, you know, thinks about it. Yeah, it's good. And maybe we can go to the material world again and smash a few more demons like that.
It's
really kind of boring here in Vaikuntha. You know? He's always good. From our point of view, once we get into this thing, it's not exactly what we were planning on. You know? My friend, Krita Karmadas, a very interesting guy from Cuba. Father was a big doctor. So he became the general manager of a temple in Vrindavan, you know, very early, maybe like 1978 or something, 79. And managing everything, he was a very personal type guy, very friendly guy. And that's when Bhavananda had his problems, all these things going on, and so forth and so on. So everything was falling apart, and he got blamed for being a part of the cause, and he wasn't involved in it at all. You know? So then he said, okay, Krishna, you've really, you know, treating me unfairly. I'm leaving. You know? So he got his sister to send enough money to fly back to San Francisco. On the airplane, he actually drank some whiskey just to prove to Krishna he was finished with him. It's terrible. It's like, see, I'm taking this. He landed in San Francisco. It was like, you know, sometime made his way to the Tenderloin, which is south of Market Street. It's really a pretty bad area. It's bad. I won't even tell you like how bad it is. So he finally got enough money for a cheap hotel. He told me the next morning he got up and he thought, okay, you know, my material life is starting here. Someone was just coming up, everybody was still asleep, and he walked down into the doorway of the hotel. He told me this whole thing. Standing there, okay, here it begins. And across the street was this four-story building, hotel, and somebody was standing on the top of it, and the guy screamed at the top of his lungs, I can't take it anymore! And jump up. And the whole thing was, the purport was that, you know, welcome to the fun house, Carlos. I'm not hiding anything. This is just the kind of girl I am. You want to enjoy me? Come on. Yeah. It was very clear. Yeah, this, my Maya wasn't deceiving him. It was just your choice, fellow. You know? And so he sat there in the doorway watching, you know, for maybe like 40 minutes. The police came, the ambulance came, even came over and interviewed him. Did you see it? I saw it. Anybody push the guy? Nope. So finally, he was trying to decide, you know, go back inside or go out. You know. So finally, he decided, okay, I'm going to go out. Okay. So he had all these experiences, one after another, and finally came back, you know, and so on. But anyway, this is the whole point that this material world, it is our choice. It's a whole kind of illusion, puppet show. We're carrying on all these things like that. And here, you know, Sati is saying, he says, this manifested cosmos is a wonderful creation of the interaction of the three material modes. Okay? The manifested cosmos is a wonderful interaction of the three material modes, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. This truth is fully known to you, yet I am a poor woman, and as you know, I am not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I wish to see my birthplace once more. Okay. So, Devahuti said, I'm not conversant with the truth exactly. I kind of have some idea, but now I'm beginning to think that maybe I should, you know, figure this out. Old age is a good friend to a devotee. You're going to die.
Yes, sir.
Right? Yes? Back here, Bhaktadas. You're going to die, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See the difference? Yeah. Maybe today? Yeah, same way too. I could have a heart attack any time now. I get arrhythmias every now and again. Okay. Two teeth missing. But it's for a devotee, for a ordinary person, it freaks them out. For a devotee, it's good because, yeah, it forces me to realize what this world is, you know, and so on. But very good. Yeah. Okay. So he gives all this Sankhya to Devahuti, you know, very detailed. And if she's a less intelligent woman, we're all in trouble. That's very sophisticated. Very sophisticated for an ordinary person. But finally you begin to understand there's different elements behind this place and the structure. And again, my background, I started in electrical engineering, changed to biological engineering, and graduated in psychology. And then, you know, I put a one in front of these zeros by Prabhupada's mercy. And I was realizing the things I learned and actually how it works. You know, the psychology... Psychologists know that this world is so much created by our own desires, our culture, and everything else. It's amazing how much variety there is in perception of the world from different cultures and so on. Yeah. For example, right now, if you're touching somebody else, raise your hand. It's got to be two people. Back there, one person raised your hand. It's got to be two people. You're touching, okay, two people. Okay. You notice we're very careful not to touch anybody else. You keep a little space there. Space perception is created by the mind. It's not a gross thing. Many, many times, Indian engineers tell me when they come to the United States, after about 3 days, somebody comes to them and says, you know, Gaurav, it's a cultural thing, but I thought I'd tell you, you stand a little close to people, and the ladies especially feel a little uncomfortable about this. You know? Because the Indian's personal space is smaller than American personal space. British is the biggest. So we generate this personal space. In a traditional Arabic culture, when you're talking to somebody, you have to be close enough for them to feel your breath on their face. So I'm trying that around here. If I invade that space, it means one of two things. Violence, or romance. So we don't know this. I'm not conscious of this. We can be conscious of it. We can manipulate it rather than being manipulated by it. But we're like absorbed in the sense objects, or the senses, or the mind, or the intelligence. Yeah. We can begin to realize these things by our yoga, by chanting Hare Krishna. Kapila does it by jnana, by sankhya. So he finishes off the whole thing after all, discussing all this with Devahuti. He says, Bamini! Bamini! What does Bamini mean? Mommy, mommy, you love me as your little child. When he leaves, she just starts crying and everything else. She's developed this affection for him and a mother, like he showed her or something. He says, cultivate that. That's the easiest way for you to realize this. But don't forget the Sankhya when you're cultivating it. And realize that you're cultivating attachment for me. We're cultivating attachment for Varabhadava, right? But we're also remembering that this form that we're seeing is not exactly their form. It's something like their form. It'll be maturing of the form. They're not made of marble. So we can cultivate it, but remember, this is a vigraha, and the vigraha will disappear, and the real form will be there. Pratimanaha tumi vishaksa vijindranandana. So different incarnations, expansions. So Kapila's there, she loves him, it's natural, he's a good person. But there's some contamination with the bodily concept of life, material concept. So by keeping Sankhya in our activities, we can go on with our ordinary activities and make nice advancement like that. Okay, that's the background. Okay, purport. Dakshayani Sati knew very well that her husband, Lord Shiva, was not very much interested in the glaring manifestation of the material world, which is caused by the interaction of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, she addressed her husband as Aja, which refers to one who has transcended the bondage of birth and death, or one who has realized his eternal position. She stated, quote, the illusion of accepting the perverted reflection, the material or cosmic manifestation, to be real is not present in you, because you are self-realized. Yeah, okay. For you, the attraction of social life and the consideration that someone is father, someone is mother, and someone is sister, which are illusory relationships, is already over. But because I am a poor woman, I am not so advanced in transcendental realization. Therefore, naturally, these appear to be to me as real. There's several levels to these pastimes. Sati realizes these things. Right? She's Sati. She's like that. But she's acting like this externally for different purposes. And finally, she decides to go, even though her husband doesn't approve of it, because really she's the mother of Daksha and the mother of the universe. So she has to see what's going on and correct Daksha for his own good and so on. You know, so different levels like that. Only less intelligent persons accept this perverted reflection of the spiritual world to be real. Only less intelligent persons. Those who are under the spell of the external energy accept this manifestation to be fact. Whereas those who are advanced in spiritual realization know that it is illusion. Illusion. Okay? Yeah, you see that? No, I don't. I see that. Illusion. Well-decorated illusion. Right? We look in our mirror, right? And makeup. I asked one time in class how many of the ladies use makeup. Yeah, some of the guys use makeup. We shave, right? Yeah, we shave, we pick our clothes out like that and so on. Yeah, we wear glasses, my look. St. Francis said, this body is an ass that we ride through this world. Don't spend all of your time taking care of an ass. Put it up on a big platform, give it nice glasses, decorate it, put badges on it, come and see my ass. It's a donkey. Going on the stairs, he says, treat your senses roughly. You know, push them into the bath, get them out, make them work. And they'll feel happy. You know, in their position. This body is not something to be glorified. Prabhupada said this body does not get diseases. Right? This body is a disease. Huh? I have some cancer, I say, come look at my cancer, I decorate it like that. There's only one, this body, when you get rid of it, that's the thing to do. It's actually a disgusting contamination growing on the mind. And behind the mind, of course, is the other desire. So only when you get rid of all this thing, our whole attitude is actually renunciation. You know, we're not born to be happy. That's not why we're here. We're born through austerity. You try and be happy, everything else becomes more and more frustrating, more and more disturbing, one thing after another. Yes. Okay. We'll go on here. Those who remember, they accept this fact. Yeah. Actually, reality is elsewhere. Okay. In the spiritual world. Hello. How big is the spiritual world? You say it's three times bigger than the material world. I never have heard an explanation about that. Is there a city prison in Melbourne? Where is
it? Yeah, he's probably in the Western
suburbs. Yeah, see, most people don't even know where it is. You know? What percentage of the city is it? 1%? Not even that probably. Maybe 1/10, maybe 1/100th of 1%. So the material energy is in the spiritual world. But it's like that. It's one part where nobody goes, and people can't even figure out where it is, and so on. So we're in this little prison, which is dark place, and you know, one after another levels. And so the real world is actually quite much bigger. One devotee, Ujwala, he was a very big guy. He had the impulse control of a 4-year-old, 5-year-old child. Like a little 5-year-old kid, they'll just throw a tantrum. And so he had that kind of impulse. The problem was he was very big. He actually killed his father during one of these fits. You know? So he was in the Vacaville mental health facility for the criminally insane in California and stuff. You know? So I got some correspondence with me. And he was sending me like their daily, their menu for the week. You know? And for breakfast, they had Kellogg's Special K, Tang orange, you know, orange powder and powdered coffee and scrambled powdered eggs. Okay. It was like, you read this, it was like, you had no desire to escape from prison or something. It was like, totally like a ridiculous diet, you know. But you think, well, if I go out, what'll I eat? If I leave the material world, what'll I do? You know? Yeah, there's real life, real food, real spiritual activity. Here, everything is just, again, a shadow reflection like that. There is a spiritual world, there is real life, okay? Actual reality is elsewhere in the spiritual world. But as far as I am concerned, Sati said, I do not have much knowledge about self-realization. I am poor because I do not know the actual facts. I am attracted by my birthplace, and I want to see it. One who has attraction for his birthplace, for his body, and for other such items mentioned in the Bhagavatam is considered to be like an ass or a cow. Ugh. Sati might have heard all this many times from her husband, Lord Shiva, but because she was a woman, Yoshit, she was still hankering after the same material objects of affection. The word Yoshit, one who is in the word Yoshi means one who is enjoyed. Therefore, woman is called Yoshit. In spiritual advancement, association with Yoshit is always restricted because if one is like a play doll in the hands of Yoshit, then all his spiritual advancement is at once stopped. It is said, therefore, those who are just like playthings in the hands of a woman, Yoshit Krita Migeshu, cannot make any advancement in spiritual realization. Jai. Yeah, it's fourth canto. Again, you mentioned yesterday that in Jadarani, the very beginning of Ishtan, she went to Prabhupada, and she said, Prabhupada, the Brahmacharya said that you said that women are less intelligent. Did you say that? And Prabhupada told her, as long as you think you are a woman, you are less intelligent. Yeah, okay. So women are less intelligent. Okay? Men are this intelligent, but devotees are this intelligent. Are you a devotee?
Okay.
Hope so. Yeah. That's the difference. So Prabhupada says all these restrictions don't have to be so strict if you're a devotee, like that and so on. Not that we become stupid and give up the restrictions and we fall into illusion, but we can adjust things because we understand. Okay. Now, why are we here? Why are we in the material world? Once you understand Sankhya, you know, if you stop eating, you just chant Hare Krishna and stop eating. Within 3 weeks, you can go to Krishna. If you stop drinking water, 3 days. Stop breathing air,
3 minutes.
3 minutes. It's that simple. Tie your hands and legs together, hop into the swimming pool. You know, and just chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. Well, but maybe because we're not convinced, you know, we are less intelligent men. Yeah, was it less intelligent women, less intelligent men? We're less intelligent jivas. We're not fully convinced, you know. We're in the material world because this action and this action and this interaction and this interaction, you know. Yeah. Just take off your jacket. No, I gotta give up chocolate. Okay, I have chocolate. Some more chocolate, okay. And I gotta give up ladies' fashion magazines. Oh, no, then I gotta give up sports events, okay. Then I gotta give up, you know, yeah. So we have one after another, we gotta get free from all these different entanglements. The prana is so convoluted and attached to different ideas. So first, yama, niyama, asana, and then pranayama. And after all these knots are out, then what? Pranayama?
Pratyahara.
Then we withdraw from this body. Okay, and then? Dharana.
Dhyana.
Prabhupada says for every single aspect in the Ashtanga Yoga system, there's a corresponding aspect in the Bhakti Yoga system. Pranayama, chanting and dancing. It's a great way to get your prana, you know, adjusted like that and so on. And at a certain point, yeah, then we withdraw from being dominated by the external activities to dominating them. But how many people, you see people, they can't stop playing the drum because it's so gratifying. Prabhu, could you stop? I can't stop this. We're not drawing because it's stimulating us. We're not engaging in social relations because it's stimulating us. But now we can withdraw from that, and now we can use those things, you know, rather than being used by them. So we withdraw from the prana, from the senses, and so on. You know. So everything happens in bhakti yoga. You know, it happens in Ashtanga yoga. And in some ways it's nice to look at the Ashtanga yoga process, the kundalini process, to see if we're making progress. So for our analytical minds, right? And right now we're very much trained in this very Sankhya analytical point of view. You know. One time Carl Jung, Prabhupada said of all the Western philosophers, Jung had the most sense. He was about 30 years old when Prabhupada was born. And he was pretty much in his previous karma, he was already on the level of Hiranyagarbha. There's the Virat Rup, Hiranyagarbha, and Paramatma. He was experiencing these things from the time of a little child. And he was trying to put it into the modern, you know, into the context. Well, we'll start this tomorrow night. Yeah. Oh, no,
tonight.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah. This has been a very, very good preaching field we discovered. Very nice people in this area. So he was trying to understand what he was experiencing because it was different than what the people around him were experiencing. In 1890, whatever, when he was, you know, maybe 1870, if you were crazy, it was just too bad. You know? If your family was rich enough, they'd put you in a mental hospital, and you'd be chained to a bed, they'd throw water on you every now and again, and give you some food, and that was it, and you'd be sitting there, you with your ghosts and everything else. It was not a good situation. But crazy people many times were just beaten to death and just, you know, destroyed. But Jung and everybody at that time started to think, well, actually, maybe we can deal with these mental problems the same way we deal with physical problems. So they started dealing with, like, free association tests and ink blot tests, and they started to get people who they could communicate what their things were. So this whole area developed of actually understanding the mind and developing some ideas like that and so on. So we have, in our society, we're very, very much tied up in this industrialized consciousness. Other societies have very different consciousness. In many ways, some ways worse, in other ways much better. A necessity we have to develop, and we need to cut off from these things. One time Carl Jung was in America. He was visiting the Hopi Indians. Hopi Indians are very famous for their you know, development, their cultural profundity, their peacefulness, like that. Great personal satisfaction. And even still, they maintain their culture and perspective in spite of this industrialization. I live in the desert. So he was talking to one shaman, Mountain Lake, and he said, well, why is it that you think, your people think, that all Europeans are crazy? And Mountain Lake said, because they say they have thoughts in their heads. Right? They say they have thoughts in their heads. And Jung said, well, of course. Where else would you have thoughts? And Mountain Lake said, only a madman has thoughts in his head. A sane man has thoughts in his heart. There's a poetess from South Africa. She says, a woman thinks with her belly. A man thinks with his heart. And a white devil, he thinks with his head. Okay. So how many white devils here? Or brown devils? Yeah. So are you identifying? You know, her cake is bigger than my cake. How can I get her cake? Can I go get my tires? Well, it's all these plans, thinking, feeling, willing is going on here in the mode of passion. In the mode of goodness, if we're identifying there, our culture is there. Yeah, I have these thoughts going on in my head, and I have these senses, experiences in my senses. But I'm in Bodhi, intelligence. And I'm conscious of my intelligence like that. When is the best time to work on purifying your intelligence during the day? Mangalarti. Mangalarti, you can really set your attitude towards things. You know, offering prayers to Radha Balava. You know, we're worshiping this kind of guru, Vande Guru, Sri Chaitanya. Please let us chant Hare Krishna for you. This whole attitude of I'm serving and what way I'm serving is developed. And then when the mode of passion starts, you get a good basis, right? Yeah. There's one lady, she's probably retired now, she was a black lady, and she was a brigadier general in the U.S. Army. There's nobody in this room would want to fight with this woman. She could lift like 100-pound bags of stuff and box and stuff, you know. So her attitude, her philosophy was that just because we occupy space in this world, we have a debt to others. So she went around with this attitude, looking at people, feeling that I owe something to everybody. It's a very good attitude. You know. Somebody else's attitude may be, Ishwara aham, aham bhogi, siddham balavan suki. I'm the controller, I'm powerful, I'm perfect. Yeah. And so you've got to do a lot of conflict with all the other controllers. So that's our bhava, you know, our, what do you call it? Antaraspika Sri Krishna Bhavanam Nita Sangha. That's our bhava. That's the buddhi. And it's in the heart. In the mode of passion, the head, and then the tamaguna, the senses and sense objects. So we can adjust this. Early in the morning is the best time to work on this and get a good attitude. If you get a good attitude, then your mind will be thinking properly and stuff. And during the daytime, everybody will be in harmony with them like that. Even your enemies will appreciate you. It's a good fight. Yeah. So this is the perspective here of masculinity and femininity. All these things are part of the Virat Roop. Right? You know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, okay. But Vamana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, I mentioned this yesterday, these are part of the Virat Roop. Carl Jung was recognizing this as archetypes. You know, different archetypes. The priest, right? The mother, right? The king, right? These are all archetypes. We have our personal archetypes, and he also talked about collective archetypes. And that was the Virat Roop. They're there. These things are there. We're talking yesterday about one of my disciples, Ananda Manjari, and suddenly her baby, she's having this reaction after 4 days, and the baby's crying, and this whole consciousness just descended upon her. I am a mother. Yes, don't mess with my kid. So the whole thing is there. When you go into the kitchen, whoop, you load a subroutine in the kitchen. When a woman is in her kitchen, right, it's a part of her body like that. I think she's talking to her friends cooking. So when a lady is there, she's helping, but it's not her kitchen, right? No? Yeah. This is about female consciousness. There's great facility for sense, just great sensual intelligence for organizing things and so on. At the time of puberty, in a male body, if you maintain celibacy, the ojas goes up. Up, 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 up. 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 24, 25. Bubba says if a boy passes stamina one time before 25, he never gets a full male intelligence. Yeah. Female body with hemorrhaging is going down every month, you know. Loss of intelligence, yeah. So different bodies, you know, different position. We don't really care. It doesn't really matter what kind of body we have. We're not going to worry about that, you know. As soon as we get bhakti yoga, okay, this is $1 million. With the $1 million, I don't need to worry about the $1 problems. But I got this thing, now I can use it properly. No. Kunti, okay? Girls are supposed to follow Kunti, Draupadi, Gandhari. Guys are supposed to follow Bhima, Bhishma, this and that. But talk about Kunti. Kunti is a wonderful example. She's a little girl, like this, who came to her daddy's house. Devasa Muni, she served him very faithfully. And what did he give her? What was the boon? He gave her a mantra. So later on, she was sitting there chanting the mantra, looking at the sun god, and what happened? The sun god appeared. And he told her, if you chant this mantra, the demigod will appear and satisfy your desire. Well, he didn't tell her what that meant. So he appears, and he's sitting there looking at her, twirling his mustache. So she's running around the table, and he's on the other side of the table, and, you know, so, you know, he's going to make all the drama out of this. So she was in the first place, shocked, everything, but he's a good-looking guy. So finally, in the end, and she fell down. She made a mistake. He promised her, don't worry, you know, you'll be a virgin girl and stuff, you know, so on. So anyway, yeah, they combined. What a wonderful experience. Why not, right? Who wouldn't want to have a marriage relationship with the sun god? No, not me. Very, very tempting, no? Very tempting, yeah. So who was born?
Karana.
Yeah, what did he have? That's what special teeth was.
The alma and the earring.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we have teeth coming out, right? Yeah. Ashwatthama had a jewel growing out of his head. Karna had armor growing on his body. He had earrings like that. but boy, now she's embarrassed. Oh my goodness, you know, what do people say about me? My whole family would be humiliated by this, you know. So what did she do?
She sent
them
off.
How?
In
the
basket.
Yeah? On a donkey? Huh? It's pretty cruel, isn't it? Put your baby in a basket and push him off into the river. Yeah, it's pretty heavy, you know. But you know, anyway, so it's a very interesting story. Read these, take these to heart, you know, identify them. So things went on, she didn't tell anybody. And then she married a dead microphone. Martha Federer. Hadibol. Battery's dead. So then she married. Yeah. And then Pandu couldn't have any kids. Okay, but she told the mantra to Pandu. In the movie, Peter Brook movie, he says, are you sure it will work? He said, I'm sure. Peter Brook, he's his English director, he has a really incredible movie. But you got to understand, he did it for Westerners. Indians look at the thing, it's weird, but if you understand, he did it for Westerners, so they could understand these things. Oh, okay, that's understandable then. So very, very nice drama. So anyway, then she had to go back with the children to the court of the court, and she knew they were not going to be happy to see these kids, you know, because these kids then are legitimately the heirs to the throne and everything else. And so Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and Dandari, oh, hello, Kunti, nice to see you. Welcome back. Are these your little children? Oh, nice. This is Yudhisthira. Oh, he's older than my son. Oh, nice. Yeah. So all this politics, and she was conscious of this. She said that she was like a deer surrounded by wolves, like that and stuff. Every moment, where's Bhima? What's he doing? This and that, everything else. You know. Why didn't Dhritarashtra just take them out and blow their brains out? Why didn't he just kill them? He was a king, and he said something, oh, they were caught stealing something and killed them. Why didn't he do that? Okay, I'll tell you. Because when Pandu was growing up, he had all his friends with him, and they went out and conquered the world and everything else. And so these guys had been like Pandu's classmates, so-called comrades in arms and everything else. And when Pandu died, and his kids were there, they were going to take care of Pandu's kids like that. So Dhritarashtra knew if he killed them off directly, there'd be a civil war. You know, people that indirectly were watching at them. And Kunti had to leave her all these things. Very, very difficult situation for a woman. And she was crying to Krishna. Okay, So it goes on, Dronacharya comes, he trains everybody, and then he has a final big exhibition to show off the power of the princes. It's on CNN, everybody's watching. All these competitions and everything else. And then finally, Arjuna defeats everybody. You know, there's one last show-off target with a fish going around. You got to shoot it from the water or something like that. So on. You know, so he's all ready to shoot. Everybody's watching. Is he going to do it? And wow! Before he shoots the arrow, it's knocked down. And it's twanging of a bow. Twang, twang. Everything's vibrating. Everybody is forcibly drawn. There's a really good-looking, handsome young warrior standing there just looking at everybody like that. You know? Kunti looks at him, and Kunti sees
Karna.
Why does she? How does she know it's Karna?
The area.
Yeah, and she recognizes everything. You know? Duryodhana runs over and embraces him, and it's the cause of the whole problem like that. At that point, Kunti could have said, I have something to talk about here. little confession to make. Yeah? She could have done that. Yeah? Right? No. Did she do it?
No.
No. Yeah. There are no smaller tests for girls. Yeah. It's different. Yes. Okay. Yeah. No smaller tests. Yeah. It is different. So at many points this could have happened. Like that. So in the Peter Brook movie, Duryodhana and Dushasana and Bhima come on the scene like that, and I know the director had them do. The director had them run around the entire studio maybe like 5 times before the scene. So they come there, they're like actually physically panting and exhausted. They have, gravel scratches on their face and everything else. And Bhima comes in and Dushasana is following him, and Bhima's like, he knocks him down and he says, I can't see you. Who are you? You know, I have blood in my eyes. And Dushasana says, it's me. Like that. You know, he's whacking at him with this iron axe, and Bhima can't see him. He's going to kill him now. You're like an old cow. You can't do anything. Ha, ha, ha. And he said, you kill me, but I'll kill you. At the last minute, Bhima pushes him over and gets on top of him. He says, now it's your turn to die. And Dushasana is calling, Karna, Duryodhana. He said, they can't hear you. Ha, ha, ha. Remember Draupadi, And Draupadi runs in. She's watching the whole thing. So then Bhima takes this, pretty well done. He smashes his chest, rips his chest open, takes his blood out, and I promise him, drinks the blood. And the camera comes up close with this blood on his face, and he said, there's nothing sweeter than the blood of my enemy. He turns, Draupadi. He's sitting like this animal, his blood all over his face, killed his cousin and everything else, and Draupadi's sitting there looking at this. So she can say, oh, I never wanted this, and run away, right? Go to hell. But she, very nice, intense moment. The actress is Malik Sarabhai, who's an Indian actress. So she's sitting there reacting like, oh God, and then she drops on her knees, flips her hair into the blood, and ties it up on her head. Die. That's a real woman. This blood is on my head, not yours. I killed this man.
Wow.
I used you to kill me. Yeah. So, okay. Okay. Yeah. Less intelligent? So he said, yes, sir. Actually, the word less intelligent, I think that actually Prabhupada meant that he was less intellectual. Less intellectual. Because men tend to be more intellectual, analytical. Ladies tend to be more sentimental. And again, it's not everybody. Some women have big mustaches, some men have breasts. I mean, this is a fact. And different kinds of big variety individually. Apply these things individually. It's a big deal like that, how to do it. So on. But generally speaking, women are less intellectual inclined. Usually what is it? Well, girls don't score as good in mathematics, and boys don't score as good in languages and so on. There are many subtle psychological differences that are a part of the root. When you get the body, you get this psychology. Actually, you get the psychology before you get the girl's body. Right? You get that and you assume that and you develop a certain kind of body based upon your subtle psychological form. I'll tell one story and finish off here. There's one story, very famous. One girl, she was, maybe a movie out of this, she was an assistant teacher in New York. And all the teachers had gone to Central Park with the class, the kids with bag lunches to have a nice picnic outing. And so the teachers were kind of talking, putting the assistant teachers in charge of the kids. And so she was with her kids when the fourth graders are saying, doing Simon Says. Simon Says, touch your nose. Simon Says, move your arms like this. Simon Says, walk like this. Okay. And Simon Says, walk in the lake. Okay. So she walked right in the lake with her clothes on. And the kids were watching, like, this is weird, you know. That, the teacher saw what's happening. She ran over and just kind of took the kids away, and the girl was kind of looking bewildered in the lake and stuff. Okay. So another time, her parents, father and mother, invited her to go to lunch. They were coming from upstate New York to go to lunch at the Waldorf Astoria. So she went there, a beautiful big restaurant, everything else, and suddenly she starts taking the water from the carafe and is pouring it all over the table like that. Everybody's watching, you know. So she had these different outbreaks, irrational, insane, neurotic outbreaks with water. But finally it got to the point where she couldn't even keep a job. So she went to see some Viennese psychologist, one lady, you know, maybe Jungian or Freud or something. And the whole movie shows how they were just going through different things with hypnosis and this and that, and developing trust in the psychologist and rapport. And after maybe like a year and a half, we went back to finally looking at the root of this trauma, the knot. You know? And when she'd been a little girl, maybe I'm 5 years old or something, her father had died in a foreign city, another city. And her mother had to go and take care of all the funeral arrangements, everything else. So she left her in the care of her sister, her little girl's aunt, who was kind of a neurotic lady herself. You know? So at some point, the little girl was sitting in there having a breakfast in a strange room with a strange person, her daddy's dead, you know. And it was a Pyrex pot, a glass pot, and the water, and it broke. It was boiling. So her aunt came in and accused her of breaking it. I didn't do it. And then she started, she did something. The room was green, it got back to that point. And then she did something to chastise her, to punish her, like that, you know. And it was so traumatic that she had caused this knot, you know, with the water and everything else, she couldn't get free from it. So they got back eventually to this green room and stuff, and remembering the green room and everything else, and guiding her and everything else. But they couldn't get to the point where they could actually face what it was that, you know, happened. So finally, this time, they're getting to the point where she sees that the girl's going to trust her and with her, going to face this experience. And just then the phone rings. The psychologist turns around and says, yes, I'm sorry. I can't deal with you right now. I'll call back in maybe like 1 hour. I'm at a very crucial point. One of my clients puts it down, turns around, and the girl was gone. And she ran out looking. She found her in her living room under the piano, holding onto the piano leg, completely catatonic. And she never came out and got a catatonia the rest of her life. And just stayed there. Intense story. Yeah. And so the psychologist is looking at this, and in her mind she says, what did that monster do in that green room? And it's like, ooh, it's really terrifying. Okay, did you notice something here? Any Sherlock Holmes? Is any Sherlock Holmes is in the audience? Raise your hand. Okay, you feel a Sherlock Holmes test. There's one discrepancy here. Big discrepancy. Who died?
Father.
Who had lunch with her at the Waldorf Astoria?
Father.
Her father and mother. It wasn't from this lifetime. It was a trauma that she'd been carrying from a previous lifetime. Yeah, so we have these. We all have these. Like vasanas. You know, these long sanskaras. Yeah, and some are big, some are little. And some of them, you know, are really big. You've got to go through them. Like chanting Hare Krishna. And maybe, yeah, you need the help of a professional. You know, something like you break your leg, okay, you need to go to a doctor. You know? If you need to go to a psychiatrist, psychologist or something. But find somebody who's a devotee and believes in Jesus Christ, okay? And, okay, yeah, and then we can get some help like that and so on. So that's the point. We all have these bodies. We have the standard model, which comes from the Bharat group. You know, feminine intelligence, masculine intelligence, donkey intelligence. Okay, what else we got? Ducks and drakes, mares and stallions. We got, you know, every little name we got. What else we got? You know, bitches and something. Okay, we got it. You know, but then there's so many details in it like that. So as a devotee, you got perspective, and you can start to work on it. Forget it. I'm going to have this until I die, and when I die, it's just going to be washed away. I'm not going to worry about that. You know, same way too. Masculine and feminine intelligence. Okay, I can use this for Krishna's service. All the guys in this movement are too hard-hearted. We girls are soft-hearted and have more compassion. You cannot be king unless you're married. You know, Ram would never have Dharma unless Sita was present. because you can't relate to the situation. You know, oh, just renounce everything. You know, I see this, my nature, I have heavy sannyas karma. I was married, didn't work out. I would never have gotten married, you know, if I'd been a devotee. So I would have realized it's just a totally ridiculous situation. I was exactly, I had no interest in social relations, everything else. My wife was going nuts. The thing that finally pushed it over the line was when I wanted to put a payphone in our house, right? I wanted to have a payphone, because then we could keep track of our phone bill. But other things before that, but that was the thing that was just like, payphone. That's just too much. You know? So I don't, you know, I don't have any criticism of my wife. You know, so, you know, if I know what I know now, I probably could have judged the situation. And, you know, so everybody would have been reasonable. In some ways, maybe Lord Shiva should have made some adjustment. You know, understanding Sati's position, where she's presenting herself, you should have made some of that. Okay, I'll go, but I'll stay outside in the car. I'll go, and if your father doesn't come out of the house, I'll just sit in one corner and just kind of smile and, you know, meditate and drink, you know, drink apple juice. So, any questions or comments? There it is.
Maharaj, I'd like you to comment on something which is current within our society, and you were talking about old age. There was a huge protest by a lot of the different religious leaders within this state about a bill that's going through Parliament on euthanasia.
Euthanasia?
Yeah. Dying with dignity.
Yeah.
Can you just make a little comment on that in regards to the devotional standpoint that we take?
So what is our perspective on euthanasia? This is the point, because you know, we have intelligent comments and guidance and always practical points. We can give. I've seen this when devotees are put into a symposium, they can come up with very practical things, you know? And people start looking at them. Difficult question. Difficult question. All the other people in the panel just look at the devotee. You know, after some time, he's going to make some nice comments.
Yeah.
Actually, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, my sannyas guru there. He was actually using this as a preaching platform. He actually went and took a couple, you know, courses at the University of California Medical Center on medical ethics and what's the current thinking, what the acharyas think. Because he'd been invited to go into Arabia someplace. And you can't preach Krishna consciousness in an Arab country. Legally, you can be killed for doing it like that. So he went in on the platform. I think he wore a suit and tie. And he had a half-empty pack of cigarettes in his pocket. That's cool, man. You know, so, yeah, you got it. You know. And devotees are a clandestine here. But they organized programs on him being a scientist and everything else on euthanasia. Because it brings up this question of what is the soul, what is karma, and everything else. So you have very, very nice discussions in this Muslim environment like that and so on. Yeah. And different religions, different acharyas, you know, Socrates, Confucius, Muhammad, you know, have made different statements about this and so on. Our point of view is that if you're trying to escape from your karma, it's not going to work, you know. And in most cases, it's going to cause more problems than just facing your karma and going through it. And then so your karma is putting you in a situation where this is happening and that's happening and so on, you know. On the other hand, we see in our tradition, Prabhupada said that his father actually kind of, when his body became so dysfunctional, that he stopped trying to maintain it. Right? When it comes to a point where you're maintaining your body by an effort, and almost an artificial effort, okay, then you can just let it go, and you can fast, you know, and let it go like that. So you're not really committing. You're dying. There's a little dying. Letting it go with some conscious effort and stuff. So, you know, like that. So you're using your intelligence, which you have, to leave your body in an intelligent fashion. So it's a kind of suicide, but not really. It's dying anyway, so we're just letting it take its course, and we're doing it in a proper fashion. My car is falling apart. Okay, I know I'm going to fall apart in the street at a certain point. I just take it to where old cars are supposed to go. Yeah. Okay. The other thing is, if you're feeling a lot of separation from somebody, legitimate basis, like sati, okay, the sati right. I have one friend, Gopal. He was in Nepal, maybe like 1975. He was trekking with a guide. And he was staying in one small town. And right about 1 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock, the whole town's waking up and people are moving. And he asks his guide, what's happening? And the guide says, well, I don't know, let me find out. He said, oh, the count died in charge of the county. And he's a very popular person. And they have to burn the body before the sun rises. So everybody's making arrangements to go there and everything else. Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay. So he went there up on a hill and he had a big pyre up and the priests were doing rituals. And there's the count's body and dressed very nicely. And he's a very good guy. His attitude was that I go to bed hungry before anybody else goes to bed hungry in my county. Really good person. You know? Everybody loved him. So they're watching this, and the sun starts, light starting to come, and they've got to get this done before the sunrise. Then everybody's looking and murmuring. And one lady's coming, all dressed, covered in white. And it was a couple of other girls helping her walk, and she's just hysterical. And some soldiers behind her. It's the countess. You know? So she came. She's there, like, beating her head on the fire, and she climbs up on the funeral pyre, and then she motions to the priest to give her the torch. And he didn't want to do it, you know, but she's the countess. You know? So he gave it to her, and she started the fire. He saw this. And then she started chanting, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram, Jai Shri Ram. Now we're going to test your japa. Jai Shri Ram. And the flames got higher and higher, and you could hear her voice. It was so determined, everything else was cracked. And that was it, like that. So, yeah. So she was probably married to him before puberty, you know, before, and everything else. So it's actually a subtle psychic exchange when you hold hands. Nowadays, I kind of ask this, things have changed in Delhi. You know, boys and girls talk, they wear different clothes and stuff. But I notice still when they go out in the evening, a lot of times the girls will be in front, the guys will be in the back talking, you know, like that and stuff, you know. I was asking one girl in Delhi, how many girls will hold hands with a boy before a wedding? And I was still thinking about it. She said, still? You know, because they know something's happening there and stuff, you know. So still, in America and the West, we're all holding hands and everything else. No, it's a big connection. Time of marriage, you exchange half the body, you know. Then you go through all these things together, so the connection is intense. So that point for such a girl who's gone through that kind of thing, you know, the separation, the pain is so great that being burned alive and being able to follow your husband is less of a distress. So in those conditions, it's okay. You say, okay, if you're suffering that much, okay, then go ahead. So then suicide is okay. Okay, your wives are going to follow you. But we're not raised that way. We're not raised that way, so we don't do that, you know. Yeah. The whole discussion is a big discussion. But that's one condition, yeah. Under certain circumstances, yeah, sati is permitted. Maybe even encouraged, you know. Another one is like Raghunath Das Goswami. He was feeling so much separation from the other Goswamis, he was going to commit suicide, and so on. So at one point he stopped drinking water and everything else, he went blind and left his body. So that separation in spiritual life also, we can also, you know, leave the body, you know, by different austerities and so on. You know. So in certain circumstances, we say, yeah, it's legitimate. You know, it's legitimate. Yeah. Nice. But if you're trying to avoid karma and everything else, no. It's only going to make the situation work. You got it. Karma's coming to you, accept it, and Krishna is. You can do it. So, question. Information. So papa ki jai, Krishna mama ki jai, Sivan chaki, Sivan sati ki jai. Stay tuned for tomorrow.
Next week.
Yeah.